Prepare yourself. It's a holiday, Big News Wednesday. Yes, we just have one show, one deep dive into the news between us and diabetes, I would assume, actually. We were talking about it, JR, before the show, but Thanksgiving is approaching. JR is approaching. JR Jennings, it's great to have you here.
What's going on, you guys? We've got, you know, about a 75% of a day left before I begin feasting, or at least the preparation for feasting. I'm doing it all this year. I got 7 folks coming over, 10 total, and I got to do a lot of cooking, bro.
Yeah, I'm getting it from Gelson's. Not everything. I have to make my yam marshmallow cranberry casserole. I got to do that every year. And we're going to make like a pumpkin pie or something. But most of it all in one thing to pick up. We have a 3-month-old. We can't be cooking all that stuff. There's no time to spatchcock. I'm sorry. There just isn't.
So. John, I'm uncomfortable with that term, number one, especially since we're talking about food. But still, I'm hearing excuses, bro. I'm hearing excuses. I mean, you know, for someone who has a child, I've been there. And I wasn't cooking when he was 3 months old. I wasn't cooking either.
That's true. So no, there's not going to be any of that. But it's going to be cool to have a little holiday. Everybody gets a little break, hopefully. Hopefully everybody watching this does. Of course, it's America, so take nothing for granted. But we have, before that, some interesting news for you. Some positive news, good developments. Some horrendous, horrific people. How Donald Trump could be taken down to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars because of a scribbled note. And did he reveal that a key claim of the Steele dossier is true accidentally? We're going to evaluate that in a return to the damage report court. And for those of you who are watching live, so not on the podcast, stick around to the end because there might be a special holiday treat for you. So we've got all that and more lined up. If you're on those platforms, definitely hit the like button. You can share the streams so people know we're live and they can join us and get involved in the conversation. But with all that said, JR, are you ready to dive into this thing?
Why does the term holiday treat sound so much better than summertime treat? I don't know.
I don't know. How about winter treat?
Think about
it. There's a hierarchy of treats, and I think ours is placed near the top of what we've got for you. So that's coming up very soon. But with that, we have to jump into important news. We have to eat our green bean casserole before we can eat our yam cranberry marshmallow casserole. So let's get into positive, but somewhat serious news. As predicted earlier this week, the leadership of Israel and Hamas have apparently come to a deal on the transfer of a significant number of hostages. That will be accompanied not only with the transfer of hostages, but also a 4-day pause in the fighting, and at least 50 women and children being transferred that have been held now for many weeks back to their families and friends in Israel. All positive news. There are still details that we do not know. And apparently, as we speak, those details are still being hammered out. But the general bounds of the deal are similar to what we discussed yesterday on the show. And so we want to catch you up on all that if you did not see that earlier coverage and understand what is being done and where the situation might go from here. Reminder that Hamas has been holding 239 hostages captive in Gaza since the heinous attack of October 7th. That includes 4 nationals from 26 countries. And between October 7th and now, only 4 hostages have actually been released and another was rescued. So very little has been done to fix that situation. Now, thanks to negotiators from a number of countries, apparently Qatar was very significantly placed in this. They have this deal. It would see hostages held captive released in exchange for a number of Palestinian women and children who are being held in Israeli jails. And children being held in jails is always just such a fun phrase to have to say. But there would also be this pause, this brief truce in the fighting that would allow the entry of a larger number of humanitarian convoys and relief aid to Gaza. We had been led to believe that it might be 300 trucks a day. I don't know for sure at this point if that's the number that they landed on, but it will be a significant increase. And coming out of yesterday's discussion, many people had been wondering, we talked about on the show, what's with the women and children that have been incarcerated? What exactly is going on with that? Well, we have a little bit more details. So the list of names published by Israel lists the charges under which the prisoners are being held. So throwing stones and harming regional security, which is deliciously vague. are among the most common charges. Others include support for illegal terror organizations, illegal weapons charges, incitement, and at least two accusations of attempted murder. So from the very light to the very serious. And apparently those who will be released are those who are not serious offenders, a spokesperson for the IDF has said. So hostages will be exchanged. Prisoners will be exchanged. There's a bit of a truce, JR. What do you make of all of it?
Something, you know, rather than consistent, not, I was going to say indiscriminate bombing, but just targeted bombing of certain folks that aren't a part of everything that's happening. So there's something. The main thing I'm, you know, concerned and waiting for is then what we do right after, which we'll get to. But then that's what's being said versus what it is that we'll actually see. Because as we've seen it so far, there's things that have been said about what is going, what was going to happen. And as it was happening, we were getting gaslit a bunch for what everyone was seeing. So there's got to be more instances of these types of maybe deals or even pressure, at least to stop going after folks that had nothing to do with it, innocent civilians. So far, it's a pause, and we know that it can get extended. Hopefully, it'll be extended long enough that they find a way that they're just fighting the folks that they were talking about fighting versus fighting people who look like the folks that they were talking about fighting. It's a little bit of a wait and see for me, but yes, positive and good news, at least first of all, for folks that are incarcerated and kidnapped from either side of this conflict, then getting some freedom. Because this is what, you know, we have to imagine. The way that life has been for folks that have been in these situations, the innocent folks from either side that have been in these situations.
No, 100%. I mean, the idea of being held hostage for a single day or even having a family member or a friend, someone you know being held hostage for a single day, let alone weeks after weeks after weeks, is absolutely unbearable, almost unthinkable. Constantly wondering every day if they're still alive, you know, wondering if perhaps Hamas has killed them or perhaps they've been killed by the like historic levels of bombing. Like the idea that your own government might have inadvertently killed them in the indiscriminate bombing. For every one of those sets of family and friends who has a loved one returned, this is going to be some consolation. Obviously, their lives have been permanently altered, even if their loved one is returned today. And the same on the other side. You know, we have these general ideas of what the Palestinian prisoners, who again are women and children, did. I guess we can believe that. We can believe the claim. But the idea that a child has been held for God knows how long for throwing a rock. I mean, like if you want a really clear moral distinction between these two, I mean, there's distinctions to be made, but Jesus, there's just a lot of awful stuff on all sides here. But good to see at least a brief pause in the fighting. And also significantly, it's very easy to focus on that because, you know, the hostages and all that. But the aid trucks getting in almost certainly will save many lives. Both those who are already injured or suffering, have had their infrastructure destroyed, have had their homes destroyed, or having to live in tents in a part of Gaza that they may not know, desperately need this aid. And once this truce is done, and they say that it could last for as long as 10 days, I don't know that that's going to happen. Netanyahu said the deal, when the deal was approved, that for every additional 10 hostages released, there will be an additional day of a pause in the fighting, which I could think of worse ways to try to extend it. Hopefully that'll work, and maybe it'll just keep being extended. But as soon as it is not, then one has to imagine that this time will have been used to acquire intelligence, to set up for future attacks. Far more people will desperately need that aid on the other side of this truce, if and when it does end. So particularly because Netanyahu reiterated that while this is great news, and obviously it's going to be very good for the family and friends of the hostages that are returned and the family and friends of the prisoners on the Palestinian side, he says that they will resume air and ground campaign to, quote, complete the eradication of Hamas, saying it's a lot of nonsense that the war will be over after this. Let me make it clear, we're at war and we'll continue the war. We will continue the war until we achieve all of our war aims to eliminate Hamas, return all of our hostages and our missing, and ensure that there is no element in Gaza that threatens Israel. So
what do we do to make sure more?
No element, JR.
Yeah, what do we do to make sure more? That's the next question. Because again, we have to remember humans. Again, I'll go with it's both folks who are innocent and the victims in these things. What's going to make a 12-year-old girl who lost seven family members want to live peacefully around folks where it happened and vice versa. So how do we get to that point? Because this is what we've seen. That's where some of the extreme rhetoric comes from, as we've seen for the past, month and a half. That's where some of the extreme murders we've seen happen. Either way, because of the anger that's built from how many years of this kind of conflict. So how does that end? Similarly, how we do things in America when it comes to guns, to anything else, we need to do things to prevent these things from happening rather than retaliation afterwards and then go, well, look what the hell could happen. Look what we did. Mm-hmm. Look, that school shooter shot up another school. We're going to go after that school shooter. What about the 27 children that died? When are we going to start protecting folks before we have to look for retaliation? So if we stop and think about what it is that's happened, that's made this happen, whether or not you think there's a solution that's different than these super libs want to think about, or whether or not you think it's something that can happen, what do you want to do to make this stop? Either side probably wants innocent civilians to stop dying. I would say at least the innocent civilians, as far as the folks in Palestine, definitely wanted to stop. So what are we going to do to make sure that happens? And I'm not saying like the United States has control over all this, even though we're big assist in this. What are we going to do to stop it from happening again? Because this is not the first time, as we already know.
Yeah, the situation is incredibly complex. That's an easy mm-hmm. thing to say. It's a tropey thing to say. It's way more complex than even we might mean or know when we say that it's complex. Mm-hmm. That said, there are some elements that are not that complex or that difficult to predict. Like, this is obviously going to contribute to further rounds of chaos and violence and terrorism and death. And then those will help to continue it as well. You can't, like Hamas arguably obviously knows that. They knew what they were getting into when they began this most recent round of the conflict. But you can't kill 14,000 people. You can't kill 5,000 children and believe, oh, we have a list of 500 Hamas fighters. We stop, we kill them, and then we're good. No ramifications for anything. That's not how anything works in the real world. Human psychology. You have conservatives in America that will they will pledge to fight the U.S. government till the end of time because like big gulp sodas are banned. Like, you know how people process like perceived slight, like we're talking about. JR gave that example. There are people who have lost every family member. It is literally incomprehensible to be put in that position and then expect that there's not going to be a contact. And by the way, it is not like impossible to overcome this. There are people, and there have been people in both Palestine and Israel for decades who have been trying, despite the violence, despite them personally losing people due to the violence, trying to push past it. And find some workable solution for peace that requires way more official support and funding. And that has almost always been lacking. So I don't know. I'm glad that we've got this deal. I'm glad that people will be freed. There's three Americans as well will be freed. 10 additional Americans remain unaccounted for, including two women and a 3-year-old girl, which is just, that's the worst. Mm-hmm. But knowing that it's only going to last so long, that the bombing will continue, the death will continue, we're going to reach 20,000 dead, like 10,000 children. Like, it is great to have a moment, but my God, are some bad moments coming down the pike. Any final thoughts?
When you think about those numbers, just how devastated anyone would be and what we lost, a few thousand on 9/11. We'll never forget it. It was horrific. Everyone remembers where they were. So if we see ourselves as humans and other folks are also humans, they're never going to forget the numbers, tens of thousands of people that have been killed and the hundreds of people being killed in any other sides of this. So as long as we can consider everyone to be humans, maybe that's the first step.
Yeah.
I guess the hardest part is that human part.
Ceasefire.
Sorry, I'm really tired.
Now. Also ceasefirenow.org, but ceasefire right now. Jesus.
It is truly an American Holocaust. I mean, the reality is that Planned Parenthood and all these big, big abortion, they set up their clinics in inner cities. They regard these people as easy prey. I mean, it's true. This is what's happening across the country now.
That is, of course, the new Speaker of the House for the Republicans, Mike Johnson, who's supposed to be the less radical version. They didn't go with Jim Jordan. They didn't bring in Donald Trump. They got him. Isn't he more reasonable? I don't know, man. The more tape comes out of him, the more crazy and radical he seems. He's talking about this American Holocaust, which in a time when there's a lot of conversation about anti-Semitism, just casually throwing out a term like that to say that your hatred for people having freedom over what happens to their own body is the same thing as one of the most reprehensible acts in human history seems like a thing that a lot of people should have a problem with. But then it's hard to even stay focused on that because he turns to Planned Parenthood is setting up shop in urban centers to prey on people of color, with the idea being that I honestly don't even know because I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid. What? That they're convincing people that don't want to have abortions that they should? Think about how insane that is. The idea that somebody who works for or runs Planned Parenthood would be like, how can we get more? Rather than there are people who desperately need access to these services, so maybe we should try to spread out so that they have access. To pitch it as a thing where they're like looking for it is so deeply weird. So you have anti-Semitism, you have conspiracism, you have racism, you have like paternalism and the most bizarre condescension. And all of that is coming from a guy who's supposed to be the reasonable one. Maybe the least important part of this is that it's also founded on complete lies. Lies that it's pointless to debunk because the right will never let go of the cozy little lies that they love so much. But no, that's not, abortion providers are not trying to track down like black voters, like black people, Hispanic people to prey on them. You can see the stats right here for where the facilities are actually held. 6 in 10 abortion providers are located in majority white neighborhoods. And in that infographic are a whole bunch more facts that not a single person on the right gives one single bit of a damn about. So we're just going to move on. And JR, what do you make of our new speaker?
Continuing the same types of lies that you'll see from Republicans anytime they want to bring up these types of issues. This is the way they've always been talking. Do you know that Planned Parenthood are racist and they're coming after black people? That's coming from a party that celebrates the destruction of black folks. In fact, when things happen to black folks, I would love to see when Mike Johnson, maybe it's maybe it's somewhere hidden, but I'm waiting for those tapes to come out of Mike Johnson talking about the malpractice for pregnant black women who, above and beyond, end up with less care when they're giving birth and going through the pregnancy process. Many die because there's a lack of concern or belief from many healthcare providers about black women. There's stats on this. I'm wondering what he was saying when there was police, when we saw all the police brutality that's been happening since forever, but finally we're having enough people recorded on their phones. Was he talking about destruction and death of black people then, or was he saying F those black people? They must have deserved it anyway. I'm waiting for the tapes for when he actually was concerned about American black people being killed by our systematic racism. But it's only Planned Parenthood that has systematic racism towards black people because they're aborting all these black babies, which you don't give a hot damn about once they're born. If they're born, because this is more politics, nothing to do with black people. Any Republican that's going to talk about how they give a damn about black people, the people that support them are going, good one, Mike, good one. You got my vote. If I would love any Republican to tell me what it is that's proof that shows they give a damn about black folks until they want to use them to come up with lies like this, because we see the stats on where these Planned Parenthood offices are in black or Hispanic neighborhoods. So yeah. The next question should be, hey, Mike, see these facts? What's your answer to that?
You know, you're 100% right to point that out. And it's so weird that Mike Johnson doesn't think that this is an give whatever historic metaphor you want, an American Holocaust that I looked at the numbers. U.S. This is WHO, and the numbers are coming from National Center for Health Statistics. First of all, the rise in maternal mortality rates from 2018 to 2021. So as an example, at large across the population, it was 17.4 per 100,000 live births. In just 3 years, it rose to 32.9, almost doubling. That's for everyone at large. That seems like maybe you could fit that into your little podcast, Mike Johnson. But then as JR alluded to, when you break it down by race, black people who give birth, because I'm trying to use inclusive language, 69.9 maternal deaths per 100,000. It is 2.6 times the white population. Where's the concern? Where's the American Holocaust? Where's the anything? Where's the funding? Where's the policy? Where's the stump speech? Where's anything? And we don't care about that because that's not about restricting rights. That's just throwing people into our meat grinder of a health insurance industry and just roll the dice and see if you survive. It's just, it is so purposefully dishonest, so purposefully. He's in charge and he is still being pitched as one of the more reasonable people. I want to give you a more fundamental idea of what he thinks about government, about human nature. Take a look at this.
One of the primary purposes of the law and civil government is to restrain evil. We have to acknowledge collectively that man is inherently evil and needs to be restrained. That's the problem with the radical left. They don't acknowledge a God.
It's so deeply weird to think that the only way that you could care about what happens or that there are laws or that there are consequences or that you might have values is based on believing in a particular conception of a deity is such a deeply fundamentally weird way to live your life. But also sort of goes against the whole idea of like small governance that the right loves to say that they want. He apparently thinks that no, the government should be involved in all sorts of stuff because of God and fundamentally evil. But think about, like, that's such an easy thing to throw out there, but really think about the consequences in terms of your values and the way you would run a government if you believe that people were fundamentally evil. JR,
I want you to imagine a Muslim candidate and openly says, everything I do is based off of the Quran. And then in previous tapes, we hear a pop-up where he says, you know what, you guys, man is just inherently evil. And the reason why I haven't killed anyone yet is because I follow the great teachings of Islam. How quick would they be afraid of what he's going to do?
But this guy
can say, I follow Christianity. I'm a good Christian. And the only reason I'm not a serial killer is because I'm a Christian. Some people, they find God. They're born again. They weren't necessarily brought up in the church. And that's one of the big things. Missionary work, bringing people over to God. So if you fail to do that, are all those people inherently evil? And are they doing evil things no matter what? Because I definitely know some Christians that did some evil things. Priests, but all the actual facts and reality we see in our world don't have to make any sense. They just above and beyond go, yo, that's Christianity though. We can say that despite what we've seen throughout existence, but let's just say because you're a Christian, you're inherently just a better person. And if it wasn't for that Christianity, we'd be wildly evil. Bro, that is not the flex that you think it is. You sound unhinged.
100%. Okay, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, though, we need to dive into a bit of a quick roundup of some of the issues facing Donald Trump. So we have this apparent, very subtle, low-key bombshell in his civil fraud trial. We have one of his former aides implying that he could be the death of democracy, which is very fun. And did he kind of admit to the golden shower story? We're going to break that down in more after this.
Are you leaving the door open to voting for Joe Biden if it's between the two of them?
I will say my door is completely shut to voting for Donald Trump. What I will say too, though, is I think everybody should vote for Joe Biden if they want our democracy to survive.
Those are strong words from former White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson. Importantly, Trump White House aide now saying that you cannot allow this guy to get back in office. And she was around him. You know, she worked for Mark Meadows, and she saw quite a bit that she has since released, including in her book. We're going to get to that. But as we launch towards this, she's apparently not ready to be like, no, I like Joe Biden, which is understandable. She's a conservative Republican, but holding out hope that someone else on the Republican side will beat Donald Trump. I want you all to remember, by the way, and she testified before the House January 6th committee, talking about what Donald Trump and his cabal of ghouls did on that particular day. Back in September, she told CNN's Jake Tapper that she believes Trump is, quote, the most grave threat we will face to our democracy in our lifetime and potentially in American history. I think that that is certainly arguable for history in the next 20 or 30 years. Buckle up, because it could get worse. But she also, and I'll just throw this out as one more thing. In the waning days of the Trump presidency, she alleged that her former boss, Mark Meadows, destroyed documents, including by burning so many files in his home fireplace that his wife complained about the bonfire smell on his suits. which sounds like something out of Arrested Development at that point. Why was he so eager to burn these that he would take the documents home and then throw them wholesale in the fire? What was he trying to cover up for? Just add that to the long list of mysteries that we hopefully, but probably will never get answers for. Jared, what do you make of this?
Prime examples here, because people like to complain, and I get it. It's something to complain about. How people will vote for someone, hold their nose and vote for someone. But yo, if you don't like that, which I don't either, we need to try to come to some kind of conclusion where we have two reputable candidates that actually are would be doing the things they're saying. They're honest about their approach because there's so many fraudsters and conmen that run for office. And we know that they're lying to us. Everyone says it. And then we have to vote for one of them. So so when Cassidy Hutchinson says, you know, the door is completely closed to Trump. But of course she doesn't support Joe Biden. She didn't before, or she didn't, I don't believe, supporting Democrats before that either. So something is big enough, like the saving democracy, that's the first step you got to take. Because if you don't save that part, we don't have anything else. Who else? Maybe she likes Mitt Romney back when he ran. Maybe she liked, you know, maybe she likes Nikki Haley or any other crazy person like Vivek Ramaswamy. Who knows? But maybe she likes another Republican. But first, we have to make sure that the guy who's actually not a Republican, who's just this crazy man who wants to be a dictator, because I think at least maybe 35% of Republicans still want a democracy. So probably it's one of those things where we have to get past the first hurdle of a guy that wants to completely transform the country and put it just under his wing. I'm just going to say that's the most serious thing for right now. Mm-hmm. After that, we can maybe try and reset and get to folks that are actually doing something for us.
Yeah. And I largely agree. And she has this, like, almost from my perspective, admiral position where she feels no need and isn't going to be like boosting Joe Biden. That's not what it's about. I mean, you can also say that it kind of reveals that a lot of what the Republicans are actually running things say they believe about Joe Biden is made up and obviously exaggerated to delude the rubes. They know that Joe Biden is not going to massively change the economic status quo. He didn't even really change the immigration status quo. And so they're not actually as scared of him becoming president as they pretend to be. And that the cultural stuff that he might actually be very different than Trump on doesn't really matter that much to them anyway. So I bet a lot more Republicans actually feel like Cassidy Hutchinson then feel free to admit, but she's got the same thing that Melania's former aide has going on, which is she has been burned by the Trumps. There's now a gulf between them, and she's freed to say what so many obviously believe, but they still believe their bread is buttered by being with the Trumps, so they can't actually reveal it.
What do you think her plan is? I'm sorry to get it. Maybe this wasn't part of your thought. What's Cassidy Hutchinson's plan? As you mentioned, you know, Melania Trump's former assistant. She's on The View. She's on MSNBC. She's damn near a Democrat. So what's the next thing?
I'm forgetting her name, by the way.
I'm forgetting it too. Now it's contagious.
Dad brain.
Yeah. So, but you know, she had a smirk and all that. Like, what's the next step? Because we know what the Republican Party is going to think of her. And honestly, I don't think Democrats should be like, oh, yeah, totally. You know, she was a part of it. Just because she finally did the right thing, it means something. So congratulations. Cool. I like that. But where's next for her? You know?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of a few things. I mean, cynically, I would say trying to get the conservative spot on The View or perhaps be a CNN contributor. But I would say that while I like a lot of the things that she says in her testimony, I don't think she has the communication skills to do those things. But it could just be that she's trying to sell her book. It could just be that she actually believes this stuff. And, you know, like, it is easy seeing all of these people that are in power and media and government, and those things have way more crossover than they used to. These people generally are horrified by the prospect that they would ever be on the outs from it, as if there's not a whole world that you can go into. I mean, I'm not even saying you have to be that on the outs. You could become a lobbyist. You could work on a corporate board or something. She could work with, you know, more moderate Republicans. There's all sorts of paths forward. So I don't know her heart, but my guess would be some combination of those things.
Alyssa anyway. Farah. Alyssa Farah.
That's actually not who I'm thinking of.
Oh, really?
It starts with an S, I think. I apologize. Dad brain. I don't know. Anyway, with that said, we need to move on to other news. This is such a weird one. It was not a good week for Donald Trump in his civil fraud trial in New York. And it all comes down to one key witness and one note scribbled on a piece of paper, oddly enough. The witness is Jeffrey McConney, who is apparently a comptroller and spreadsheet czar at the Trump org. That sounds like such a fun job. And here is the note. So take a look at it. There's a lot of text and then a little scribbled in blue ink note near the top that says DJT to get final review. See, what this comes down to is net worth statements, which are fairly fundamental to the fraud case that's going on right now. Now, Donald Trump and his legal team would have you believe, but more importantly, the jury believe that none of that has anything to do with him. And if the estimates were off, it cannot be said that that's him being a fraud or engaging in fraud, because he's not the one doing it. Others are doing it. Maybe McConaughey's doing it or someone else. But when there are notes from the people typing these up that Donald Trump is going to get the final review, that kind of undercuts your argument just a little bit. And there's more to it than just that, more bad news for him. But that was People's Exhibit 3054. And it doesn't help. And McConaughey under oath, had to tell the truth about it. It was asked Donald Trump would get final review. And McConaughey said, that was my understanding. Yes, his voice gruff. Doesn't seem super eager to answer these questions, but Trump has denied involvement in all of these. And apparently each year was riddled with billions of dollars of exaggerations. And, you know, we for 2014, by the way, alone, the one that's referenced in that, $3.5 billion in exaggerations. That is not, by the way, just bragging rights. There are massive tax consequences of these net worth statements. Your relationship with banks, abilities to get loans, like that's where the criminal element of this comes in. And now you have more and more of a paper trail of him actually being involved that you can throw on top of the fact that in his own testimony, he alluded to him having control over this. What do you think, Jer?
I'm trying to find a couple of holes in this case because they keep hitting him with everything. So in what world would we not believe that Donald Trump was a part of it? And that's just believing it. So that's not a legal thing. But then after this, we start proving it. I'm very surprised that his attorneys didn't talk about McConaughey on the stand and be like, oh, yeah, that DJT, it actually means don't just trot, run to get that final review. Like this makeup madness just because they need to. And they know they've already lost. So they already know it. And many times these defenses or these approaches they do within court are maybe for their own, I guess, entertainment or some kind of a pushback against the man because they know they've already lost. Little admit right in front when someone asks them directly because, again, they're under oath. Yo, so what does it happen? Yeah, it was Donald Trump for the final review. And we'll have we'll go right back to the next question and be like, yeah, Donald Trump had nothing to do with this. It's like it's like that Chappelle Show episode when they recreated that Rick James event. Yeah, I didn't stomp on his couch. Yeah, I stomped on his couch. And we're supposed to just believe this. What's going on here?
Mm-hmm. I did not expect that reference, but I love it. Yeah, you're right. Just quickly, we can't run through all of what has happened in the case this week, but here's some more bad stuff. So in the 2015 net worth draft, McConaughey made a notation in ink that, quote, this computation also includes forecasted deals that have not signed yet, which is not how this is supposed to work. McConaughey was asked whether Trump wanted to exclude some $151 million in as yet fictional assets. The final version of that year's net worth statement shows McConaughey's suggestion was ignored, possibly by Trump itself. It doesn't say for sure, but it says, okay, we have all of this potential money that we can list that we don't actually have because the deals aren't signed. Maybe Donald Trump can take a look at this. And then it comes back, we're including it. Now, in this case, we don't know that Trump was responsible for that, but we do know that they were including things that did not actually exist. There's your fraud as well. And also, by the way, what potentially could hurt their case in front of the jury is they didn't willingly turn over these drafts that had the hand notes. Okay, that they were eventually turned over by Mazars, one of the accounting firms involved in this. Trump organization didn't do it willingly. So that makes it look like they were trying to hide something. So there's just a lot here that doesn't look good. McConaughey, by the way, ended up breaking down on the stand when being asked about the valuation of Mar-a-Lago. So why was it valued at $500 million and listed as a private residence when the county assessor had valued it at $28 million? And in 2002, Trump had signed a deed saying that it would only be used as a club. So, and there's no answer for that because the answer is fraud. You really don't want to say that if you're one of the Trump people. So this just looks really, really bad. At the end of the day, don't get your hopes up too much just because the huge numbers that are being thrown around of hundreds of millions of dollars might not happen. And even if they do, Trump isn't going to jail as a result of that. He'll have less money, but it is, it feels at least a little bit good to see them having so much trouble in court.
Run real fast thought before you go to that next part. They like to run that line. If they can do it to me, then they'll do it to you, to folks who have nothing to do with $151 million in inflated assets to save some money or inflate their properties and promote yourself falsely and like a con man. So anybody who believes it, give it a try. See if you can, by the way, he got away with it. He'd gotten away with it until now. So inflate your assets in some kind of thing by $15,000. Instead of $151 million. And see what the IRS does to you. See if they're like, oh, I mean, it's okay. Your name is just Donald Trump. Or your name is Joe Johnson. And who cares? They're coming for you. Not for this guy until right now. And do you get the chance to step outside court every time they're uncovering incriminating evidence about you? And you get to go, look what they're doing to me. They keep me from going back to my construction job. No, everything that they're doing to him has never been done, but it's always been done to you. So this whole backwards reality that they keep pushing on you guys, man, it's the only reason that it's still working is because you're still believing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh God, there's so much more I want to say about this, about how there's so many of these cases he's facing that had he just chosen to keep being a rich a-hole on TV and don't run for the presidency, we wouldn't have heard about any of this. You'd still be committing fraud to the tune of billions of dollars a year. You could buy a car, buy an island, spend time with your stupid kids, like just do rich person stuff. Why did you have to become president? Anyway, with that said, that's the serious stuff. Now, I want to have a little bit of fun with the holiday approaching. There are some bold claims being made about one of the most notorious little bits of speculative news from the first Trump term. And as a result, court is back in session. Okay, I'm here, Judge Iderola. We've got Judge Jackson, because we need to evaluate something. There is a video that has been making the rounds over the past few days, and a lot of people have had fun with this. There's been a lot of headlines about it. People are laughing about it, but not everyone has noticed a very small, very specific statement in the video you're about to see that might reveal a whole lot more than Donald Trump intended to. We're going to play the video and then see if you can spot it.
This is the greatest witch hunt. It started with Russia, Russia, Russia. Remember that? He was with four hookers. You think that was good that night to go up and tell my wife, it's not true, darling. I love you very much. It's not true. Actually, that one she didn't believe because she said he's a germaphobe. He's not into that, you know? He's not into golden showers, as they say they call it. He's not. I don't like that idea. No, I didn't. I thought that would be a big problem. I was going to have a rough night, but that one she was very good on. She said, no, that you're okay on that one.
Okay, so we are definitely going to have a talk about how routine it apparently has become for Donald Trump to have to wonder, is this thing that was revealed about my personal life going to be trouble with Melania? And Melania apparently being just so desensitized to the whole thing that none of this phases her. We're talking about the sort of like humorous, comical one that revealed in the Steele dossier that Donald Trump was in Russia and they filmed him engaging in water sports or whatever. But everyone, remember, for a span of literally months, he was accused of sexual harassment, sexual assault, and rape by literally dozens of women. Theoretically, he saw Melania from time to time amongst all of those. And so this is almost like a distraction that he wants from all of those incredibly difficult, one would hope, conversations with his wife. But anyway, let's set that aside. What was revealed in that was not about the water sports or whatever, but about the prostitutes. Not that they existed, but that there were four. And what people noted was, the Steele dossier doesn't say anything about how many prostitutes there were supposedly in that Moscow Ritz-Carlton hotel room, just a number. And four is admittedly a number, but it's also a specific number. So what they're saying, JR, is it's like a Freudian slip. he's revealed the truth of it by putting a specific number to it that had never been revealed before. Do you find that persuasive?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, why? I mean, you can, if you, there's many times I'll just throw a number out. Many times my number is 18. definitely not in situations like this. But, you know, basically, like there's 18 different things. You just say it, you know. But if it's specifically about something where you're trying to, for some reason, talk about this more, I have a better idea for you, Donnie. Don't talk about it. Just don't talk about it. Even if, you know, because it's all still speculation, even if it is true, just don't. Talk about it. Like, nobody else is talking about this. But as you point out, that was actually my first question, but you answered it before I even said it, was what is the motivation, I guess, to get the people's minds off of the Georgia case, the New York case, and the 91 other indictments and charges going on here with him? So, bro, if you have to flip from the charges to golden showers, damn, man, there's not many good options left for you.
No, not necessarily. So you're ruling guilty. He has admitted to the truth of the PP tape.
I mean, considering the very low bar for the TDR Supreme Court, I mean.
What are you saying, guilty, sir? These decisions are carved in marble, okay? And then put in the back alley behind the building. Okay, so we have one guilty opinion, I suppose, or judgment. I'm also just going to briefly point out, like, If somebody claims that you were filmed with prostitutes in Moscow engaging in water sports, and your defense is, but I'm a germaphobe. Come on, people, I would do that. What? That's like if you heard that, like, I had met up with a bunch of prostitutes in a hotel, and I was like, yeah, but I'm an introvert. Come on, does that sound like something I would do? That's not a great defense. The defense should be that this is utterly inconsistent with anything having to do with my life. The issue for Trump is that he cannot make that claim because it's not inconsistent literally at all with the rest of his life. But that said, it's time for me to make a judgment. Oh, I know I have Trump derangement syndrome. I am the outbreak monkey for Trump derangement syndrome. But that said, he likes to embellish and he likes to throw out details. I'm just impressed that he didn't bring up donuts for some reason. So I don't think that throwing out the number 4 is evidence enough. Okay. So I'm going to have to say innocent until proven PP guilty for now. But unfortunately, that means that we have a split decision here. So we do have to throw it to the voice of the people, Justice Voice of the People. There's a poll going on right now, and it looks fairly definitive on Twitch, with 83% responding yes to did Trump accidentally admit to the golden shower. So I defer to Judge Jackson as well as the people, guilty as PP charged.
But I understand what you're saying, John. You're trying to raise the bar of this court. You want to make it a lot more prestigious. So I'm on your side.
And I think we've accomplished it. I think that this decision, I think that New York Times is going to run with it. I think it's definitive. And that's that. So sorry, Trump. And sorry, Melania, by the way, for having to be near that guy. Anyway, we're going to take a break. When we come back, lots more to talk about. Don't go anywhere. Someone in the chat is telling me to look up hair tattoos. Thank you, but I'm good for right now. Anyway, with that said, if you're just joining us now, please hit the like button. We're going to jump into more news. A website supporting Ron DeSantis has run a poll that they then used to create an article highlighting that. And buckle up, because this is wild. Nikki Haley, who's running against him for the Republican nomination, her parents immigrated to the U.S. and named her Nimrata. I'm going to give you a moment to process that information. But here's the poll. Did you know that Nikki Haley's parents are immigrants from India and her birth name is Nimrata Ranhawa? And they took the results of that to then say Republicans shocked after discovering Nikki Haley's real name. Now, first of all, fundamentally, the entire endeavor is super racist. And we're going to focus on that. But also, and nobody else seems to care about this, it's also not even true inside of their own experiment, because I answered the poll saying, no, I'm not surprised. I knew that. So I said, yes, 82.1% had said yes. There were almost no people even responding to their poll that were shocked by this. Everybody already knows this. So it was going to be racist, even if a bunch of racists had been like, dear God, is that true? But they weren't even surprised by it. None of this is new. Like, Nikki is her name. It's her real middle name. So you cannot say that that's not her real name. And Haley, she didn't make that up. She married a dude whose last name was Haley. So what part of this do you have a problem with other than the fact that her parents immigrated from India? The answer is clear. That's the only thing that they have a problem with. Darren, what do you think?
Let's keep it real. If she hadn't taken the name Haley from her husband, how much of an independent, hateful woman would she have been in their eyes as well?
100%.
Come on now, bro. They'd be like, oh, this woman thinks she's so independent, can do anything without a man. What's the matter with her running it as a Republican? I also have this crazy, I thought about it, and then I had to add a couple to it. See if you guys can recognize these people's names, their real names. Willard Romney. It's not Mitt. George DeVolder Santos. I'm sorry, Anthony DeVolder Santos. I'm sorry, George Santos DeVolder Anthony. I don't know. He doesn't know either. Oh, here's someone else. Addison Mitchell McConnell. That's crazy. That's that old guy. Also, Raphael Edward Cruz. Oh, it's his middle name is Ted. Oh, that's crazy, except he shortened it. I didn't know this one. James Richard Perry. I didn't know his name was James Perry, but for some reason, he's hiding his real name. What's wrong with Richard? Is it a little bit too American? What's wrong with James? A little too American for you? Also, Kara Carlton Fiorina. Carly Fiorina. Running mate for one, Raphael Cruz. Yeah. So maybe we should run some polls and ask folks, yo, did you know that Ted Cruz's name is Raphael? Actually, that was happening a lot because he was talking all this trash. So obviously, with those examples as well, and I'm sure people know that as well, probably 82.1% of folks probably know that as well too, but there's not that same kind of anger surrounding it. I wonder why. Sorry.
Yeah, 100. You're 100% right. It is, in fact, I think, arguably harder to find politicians who just went with their birth name. Like, there's not actually that many of them. I mean, you could throw Beto O'Rourke was involved in a conversation about this, and here's where it hits closest to home, everyone, because they're doing all of this to destroy Nikki Haley, to protect Ron DeSantis, because they have to make sure that they take out Nikki Haley. So that Ron DeSantis gets to finish second in this whole thing instead of Nikki Haley. It's all utterly pointless. But what about Ron DeSantis? What about his name? What is he hiding? Take a look at this.
I am Ron DeSantis. I'm Ron DeSantis. I am Ron DeSantis.
This is Governor Ron DeSantis.
Hello, this is Governor Ron DeSantis wishing everyone a Merry Christmas.
Hi, this is Governor Ron DeSantis, and I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
The way to pronounce my last name, Winner.
Well, what the hell is going on? What are you hiding, Ron DeSantis? DeSantis? I don't know anymore. Like, here's the thing. You want to attack people for changing the name? Go right ahead. But we can go into the actual content of the change. So Nikki Haley, who did nothing wrong and isn't hiding anything. In fact, she tweeted back in 2018, Nikki is my name on my birth certificate. I married a Haley. I was born Nimarada Nikki Ranhawa and married Michael Haley. Super simple, easy to understand. You know what's not easy to understand? Why did Ron DeSantis change the way he pronounced his name at like 48 years old? I'm not saying you can't, you're allowed to. Iderola is not how my name was pronounced when my family was in Italy. It was changed. But I didn't spontaneously do it last Tuesday. And if I did, maybe I could at least explain why I did that. So I don't know. Glass houses when it comes to the names, by the way.
Of course.
And I will throw one more out there because Jared did a great job of summarizing all of those who've changed their name. I will remind everyone, Donald Trump, his father, Fred Trump, was born Frederick Drumpf. Oh, that's his paternal granddad, I should say. So two generations before, they changed their name too. They all do it. Get over it.
I went to school with several guys who migrated here, and they use an American feeling version from their Indian name. It's so that people won't keep effing up their name from anywhere from the grocery store to deliveries. Come on.
100%. We unfortunately are out of time, everyone. There was more to come, though, in the aftermath. So don't go anywhere. We've got that and a special treat for you coming up after this. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.